Hello, my name is Emil Jimenez, and I'm the CEO of Mindbank AI. I'm also the CEO of Passion Communications that I found in 2009. Mindbank was my latest baby that I found in 2020, and it occupies most of my life these days.
Hey, it's Kellen, and today on Diversified Game, I met brother Emil in CES. And you guys already saw the Andrew Weed, and that was about Mindbank too, not about cannabis for those who say weed and all. This passion of Mindbank AI and what they've created is amazing. They're going to get into it all, but I also want him to talk about how he lives in two different countries. Sounds like Andrew Tate without all the drama. I know you guys. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, my bro?
Doing well, man. And I think, you know, I'm a firm believer of serendipity and the universe conspiring to help you on your journey. And the universe conspired and put us in touch to tell this story.
Definitely. Let's start before we get into the business side. Let the people know how you're living, what Tim Ferriss wrote about, you know, many moons ago, living in two different countries, doing business in two different countries. Maybe you got seven different passports too and eight different residencies. But if we can first just tap into that a little bit on how you're a global citizen, I'd love for you to share.
I would say begin at birth, probably, you know, if you think about it. You know, I like to say I'm the only gringo in the house, you know, like the only American born in the house. So even from a young age, you know, I think my birth certificate has stamps on it from flights, you know, definitely. So I've always kind of traveled a lot. And then as a young child, it was mostly between my living in New York City and my family coming from the Dominican Republic. So back and forth, there was already that two world, you know, growing up in Uptown Manhattan and then, you know, being exposed to downtown Wall Street, two worlds, you know, two completely different, might as well have a passport control, you know. So I think I've always been able to navigate these two worlds. And then I grew up in New York City, and I always said there's two kinds of New Yorkers, the ones who will never leave and the ones who want to get out. You know, I always wanted to get out. I was like, I like New York is my, you know, it's definitely my home and where I feel I'm from the most. But I knew the world is much bigger than just that island, right? So I always loved to travel and always wanted to go abroad. And my first experience abroad was actually in high school. We did like a high school trip to Italy, and that's what let the floodgates open, you know? Being exposed at that young age and just seeing, you know, you study about the Vatican and you go see the Vatican, the Colosseum, and you're there. It's that immersive experience is like, you know, we're just trying to get into that now with VR and metaverse, but it's not the same, right? And that wasn't definitely available back 30 years ago. I had the luck and the opportunity to do study abroads. And I started as a student going abroad, right? I did my study abroad in college. I did during my master's program is really where I really like lived there and worked there. So I went to what I call the Harvard of advertising, and it's called Miami Ad School, and they have internship programs abroad. So I did an internship program in Budapest. So you're working at an agency, they put you up in an apartment, and you're there for 4 or 5 months, right? Whatever it is, for a semester. And then you're working. You're that's what you're doing. You're working and getting work experience. And then the last one was Prague. And it's one of those things where, you know, life and the universe just happened. I did well with my internship. I won some awards. Met a girl the week I was supposed to go back, you know, came back to New York, was there for a few months, but then I was like, I gotta get back to Prague and you know, and try to make that work. And how things conspire, right? So I was there for a long time, for a summer in Prague, doing this internship, come back to New York. A few months later, I go back to do interviews. This is like, you know, October, November, to interview at some agencies for work. The day I land, I call up a buddy of mine, and he's like, hey man, it's crazy. It's great that you're in town. Today's an award show. Your work that you did last summer won best advertising campaign of the country. And this is like on the day that I arrive. And I'm like, okay, that's like God and the universe and everyone involved saying, this is where you belong, my son. Right. At least for now. Right. And then just, and as you can imagine, that just opens up doors, right, for work opportunities. And mind you, this was 2003, that's 2005, 2006, around that time. So working was in work, finding work wasn't so easy back then, especially in the creative industry. So I was able to be a big fish in a small pond, you know. And if you ever read any of these business strategy books, it's actually better to be a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond. So yes, I got a lot of exposure at a very young age. And I mean, like, so working in this agency in Prague, I was actually working from a in close connection with the London office, which was their headquarters. And I was basically what they call a young star. So they would fly me around solving problems for big brands all over the world, pretty much, like London, New York, Bangkok, Central and Eastern Europe, Sweden, Amsterdam, wherever there was a big tender, big pitch, and they needed some fresh blood and cool ideas. They're like, send the meal, send so-and-so, they'll crack it. And yeah, that was my life for many years. And then obviously then in 2009, I got the entrepreneur bug, opened my own agency. I was 29 years old. You know, I had no mortgage, no kids, a bit of money in my pocket. I was like, you know, let me open my own company, see what happens. So, you know, I didn't speak the language well enough, but I knew that I was good enough to get business. So I opened my own company, and literally, man, just how, like, the first week I got a client, made more money in a week than I did 2 months of work at my agency. Once again, I'm like, okay, a sign saying this is where you belong, my son. And I just kept riding that wave. And then in 2020, I got inspired by my four-year-old daughter when she had an interaction with Siri. And I said, wow, you know, today she talks to Siri, but she can talk to me like that, even if I'm not alive. I want to build a place where I can create a digital twin of myself so my little girl can always have daddy with her. And pretty much put my communications agency to the side, gave it to a friend of mine, say, hey, run with that. You know, I'm going to do this for now. This is my new calling. And that's how Mindbank was born. A little four-year-old inspired me.
And this is going to be a lifetimes of work, because what you guys have going on is not going to be done. And every great, you know, dream and plan is a lifetime of work. But I want you, before you go too deep into Mindbank, to let the person, you know who's maybe like 14 years old, maybe they're 17, maybe they're 45. What was that? Was it MAD, you know, the Miami Ad School, that open these opportunities? Because I call Grambling State the Harvard of the South, just so you know. And I tell people, there's so many people that I've met and opportunities that they weren't given to us, but we made them happen together. And not for those people, that does not happen the way, because Kellen didn't do that. Like, it's all a God thing. So I'm just trying to see if we can crack the code, because, you know, so many people are in school right now, or about to go to school, or about to drop out, saying, where is this going? This isn't, I know more than the teachers about this subject. Yeah. You know, for you, what was that?
Well, you know, I had, there's a bit of luck and a bit of hard work involved in everything, right? So and genetics, I would say, to some extent. I've always been a very intellectually curious boy, right? Since I can remember. And I've got an interesting story that I said at an interview once, and it was you know, when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in New York City, but my infancy, the first 4 or 5 years of my life, was in the Dominican Republic, right? So I was born in New York, and we moved back to DR when I was really a baby. So, but I lived near a university, right? And my mother and my brothers are older than me. So they were already in university when I was 3, 4 years old, right? And my mother's a professor there at the time. So it was like a few blocks away. I was literally 4 years old, man. And I would walk, I don't know what, maybe half a mile to this university all by myself or with my friends. And we would go see the dead people. Now, what is the dead people, right? Imagine a little four-year-old rugrats running around, right? 4, 5, 6 year old kid going to go see, all right, let's go see the dead people. And that was the morgue of the university where the med students did autopsies, right? And it was in a bunker, man. So you would have these little windows on the ground and these little kids with their, you know, noses stuck to the glass, looking at these dead bodies with no skin getting chopped up by med students and poking around. And of course you find that fascinating as a kid, right? And we would be able to go down once in a while and get close up to the bodies and see the veins. And I was telling you, like, I remember being fascinated by the, like, complexity of it, right? And it's just like, how, like, trying to figure out how everything works and stuff. And then I realized that in that room, in that bunker on that island, is where I fell in love with science, right? And then you start looking at your life from that moment all the way till today. It's like, wow, you know, I've always been fascinated by this stuff. I've always been kind of tinkering. And if it's not medicine, it's science, it's space, it's that. So I've always, you know, led my curiosity. And that's been, you know, obviously fed by my environment and also my own curiosity. You know, back in the day, remember, I used to go to the library as a kid and grab 8-10 books and dive into whatever topic I was interested in at that point. It's got to be self-driven, right? And if someone tells you, go read this, you're like, you're not going to do it, right? So you got to find that calling, you know, you got to find that thing that motivates you, really. And then build an environment around you that helps you kind of get to that, you know? So when it comes to the one transformational moment in my life that I would say, that's the moment where it got put into like hyperdrive and steroids got injected into Emil's brain, let's say, you know. That was when I was 13, going on to 14, I got accepted as a Better Chance Scholar. So ABC is a national scholarship organization that selects about 100, 120 students of color every year and puts them into prep schools. So I was one of those 120 in 1994, whatever it was, you know. Yeah. And obviously here you go, it was straight up like rags to riches type of situation, right? It's like you go from living in uptown Manhattan with drug dealers and like, you know, my Say No to Drugs campaign was the crackhead on the corner named Stretch telling me, Emilio, don't do this shit, man, you know, like, you know, that was my Say No to Drugs, you know. He's like, you're too smart for this, bro. Don't do this shit, man. You know, I remember this like today. And then going to North Jersey, next right over the George Washington Bridge, is literally just over the bridge. And it's like mansions and opulence and, you know, parents who've got like trust funds and you know, kids, like, it's just like it's crazy, you know? And I would say that exposed me tremendously to that world and gave me that chance. Literally, it's a better chance because now you've got the opportunity to take advantage of this, and what are you going to do with it, right? So that's the one moment I would say is transformational. But to your point of like, how can you inspire a 14-year-old kid, you know, go after your dream, man. Go after what you're interested in and just dive deep into it. I mean, like, live and breathe whatever that is, you know. And what I mean by that is, like, if it's basketball, know everything about basketball, not just how to play, know the business, know the psychology, know the history, know the TV, the announcing, like everything, you know, because it's not just one dimensional. Every aspect of an industry has multi dimensions to it. So you might not make it to the NBA, but you know what? You might own the team one day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why not? Like, so learn the business. Straight up, you know, like learn how to manage people as an agent. Like, so many aspects of it can lead you on that path, and you never know where it goes, right? Just keep going on that path.
You might own a team and it might not even be in this world. It might be in the metaverse, and you may hit, like, do, you know, follow your passions and figure it out. So, you know, sometimes people think I did go to a better school, or if I did come from a different, you know, lineage. And again, the real great ideas come from the people who kind of had to get it out the mud or avoid Stretch and said no to Stretch. So, you know, on the corner with Mind Bank, you know, tell the people, and I always think about the end user, even though if you guys were listening, you heard Andrew give a great, you know, he broke it down, but I just want you to, you know, give your take on Mind Bank and how you sell it to the world or pitch it to the world, because it's nothing that you got to sell. Everybody wants to live forever, or they want to have some type of a presence here. Give us the game for the end user, of course.
Yeah, so for the end user, it's very simple. Like, it's a platform for you to create a digital twin of yourself. And the way we do that is through linguistics. So it just question, it's like a diary of your life that you answer questions about, right? And we analyze the linguist, we analyze your linguistics to create a dashboard of the mind. So that has two sides. On one end, you're uploading your life story to the cloud and to our infrastructure so that then someone else can access it and retrieve and have a conversation with it, right? The other point of that is that you learn about yourself, right? You start seeing, wow, when I speak about this topic, I have a high level of anxiety or things like that. And one of the biggest challenges in career development and just is personal development, personal understanding. Who am I? You think you know who you are, right? But a lot of people don't, right? It takes years of self-reflection and wisdom and patience to really start understanding that life is perspective, right? Who you think you are, it might not be who other people think you are. So, and you have to be humble enough to realize that's just how things go, but you can also work on yourself. So we want to do self-care and self-awareness really well with MindBank. And obviously the ultimate game here is to create a digital twin that can have be like your conversational agent if you pass, right? That's the end game. And from a technology perspective, you know, all the data that you're putting up is helping feed, it's your personalized model that works in tandem with a generalized model. And it's really interesting because when we started this business in 2020, I knew GPT-3 and all these technologies were coming. I knew, you know, I saw it coming. I was like, okay, this, our technology needs personalized data for these generalized models, right? And that's the magic. That's where the magic is going to happen. And we're at a beautiful point in time right now when it comes to this. And yeah, that's the story of MindBank and what we do. And obviously we are in this whole Web3 migration at the moment as well, where Andrew's leading the charge there. Because also from an ethics perspective, you know, we want to make sure that this is ethically sound and structurally sound from a technology perspective going forward.
And, you know, I got into it. I won't repeat the questions. I'll try not to repeat the ones that I ask Andrew because I don't have any set questions. But I always think about, you know, people who are scared of the future. And if you don't read books talking about the future, like, you know, Peter Diamantis, Dr. Peter Diamantis, you know, future is faster than you think. People will say, well, what happens when you take MindBank? You mix it in with crazy old Elon Musk's Neuralink, put it in and get someone who, you know, is a genius and maybe they're a stable genius, you know, but I'm not thinking of what you guys are thinking. I'm thinking about, you know, the next Hitlers, the next sociopaths, and they're able to put that in their brain chip and get that information, you know, so you take the average idiot and make him a genius, which, you know, I don't know how far away we are. We could be there right now looking at the media. But what do you say to those people who are scared of, you know, this AI technology being put in the wrong hands? Same thing. They make the same complaints about ChatGPT and, you know, having your own server. Why would you want that, Emil? Why do you need your own server? Be on AWS like the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, I begin with the analogy of, you know, AI is like fire. You know, if we were cavemen in the cave and I'd show you fire, you'd be like, whoa, what is that? It's dangerous, right? You can get burned, but it can also cook your food and provide warmth on a cold day, right? There's two sides to every coin. So obviously, you know, from a business perspective, we've built in, let's say, not only the ethics, but also the technological capacity to control it. And three, like Andrew's a key member of this team in that space, right? He comes from, you know, he's what you would call ethical hacker. So we're always thinking in that way. Okay, can someone misuse this data, right? And the whole point of going to Web3 is so that you have control of this data, right? Because even for me, the way I see the business, okay, let's say we never sell this company. That's not my plan to sell it. 200 years from now, my great grandkid is, you know, a very like sociopath, crazy person. That's too much power, right? So you want to have a governance and a way that is decentralized so that not one person can have all that power. From a perspective of data information sharing, that I'm this is me speaking as Emil, not me as a company, but you know, I have a vision that wouldn't it be great if the world was completely transparent and you would be open to share your information with others and your knowledge with others so that others can learn from you and you could learn from them without the fear of either he's going to take my idea or without the fear of they're going to misuse this and treat it. You know, that's the point of education and point of society, sharing ideas and building this shared knowledge. You know, it could be that one day, you know, let's look at Google today. Google is that shared knowledge platform. You want to find something? Google it, right? And you'll find different viewpoints from different people, different content pieces and different sources. Theoretically, it is someone's digital twin's data in there because someone sat there and wrote this thing, right? So that's their piece of knowledge that they're sharing with you that you're actually using to your advantage. So let's put that into an entity called the digital twin. And instead of being Joe Schmo, it's your grandma, you know, telling you the story about your father or your great grandfather that you never heard, right? Wouldn't you want to have that story as part of your family legacy? You know, and once again, learning what makes you, you, right? That's the whole point of the thing, right? Like, how do you learn about yourself as a human being? And can we embrace AI to help us in that journey?
You know, some people are even scared, and I've met family members through, you know, ancestry.com, and you go back and ask someone, hey, why didn't you tell me? And that, you know, that if the AI really has your personality, I could just imagine some of those conversations that you could not have had in real life. And you know, I'm glad you guys are one of many companies doing this, because if people are going to look at you ever like the bad guy, come to CES and see everybody who is trying to clone themselves or, you know, do something, giving away their data and don't even know what it will be used for. You know, and so, you know, you guys seem to be, again, on the ethical side of things. Mindbank, 50 years from now, are we just going to, you know, be kind of like walking cyborgs? And how do you get it where that family member who should, you know, maybe just go to rest, like, can you stop the nonsense and like, you know what, that person was so toxic, we don't need them anymore. You know, we don't want the Hitlers of the world. Yeah.
Well, 50 years from now, that would be, you know, I think the way we see that aspect of it is that the family is a DAO, right? A decentralized autonomous authority. And the whole family has to vote Grandpa Hitler off of, you know, to delete Grandpa Hitler. But, you know, I'm also a believer of, once again, self-awareness is that you need to be aware that you might have Hitler-like tendencies. Mm-hmm. Right. And some people, let's be honest, some people are, you know, on edge all the time and are anxious people or aggressive. Right. And if you look at any genetic studies, a lot of that is genetic or predisposition for it. Right. Alcoholism, you know, affects all the communities in like the Native American community, the African American community, the Latin American community. It's a genetic trait that we carry. It's in our genes to have a higher propensity for alcoholism. Now, does that make us less human? No, it just means that's what we got to be careful. We just got to be aware of this. That's it. You know, that you have a higher chance of getting addicted to this stuff. So, you know, so back to your point of like, you know, Grandpa Hitler or something like that, you know, why not embrace the fact that, yeah, you know, that is part of your history. It's not always peaches and roses, guys. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. If you look back, you know, we got some thugs and criminals and people that aren't so, you know, upstanding citizens of society, but we need to learn from that.
Definitely learn and you know, progress, hopefully. You know, with this Mindbank AI, and I want to talk about passion in a minute, but I want to know, you know, how do you split your time? Because so many people, you know, you'll go on someone's LinkedIn and they'll have seven different businesses and they are the CEO, the CFO, the CTO. You say, my gosh, you got all the talent in the world, and they'll have all the positions. How do you split your time? Because even on passion, you know, you have, you know, big clients in this communication company of yours.
Yeah, so passion, like I mentioned, passion opened in 2009, and ever since, I'd say probably like 2021, I brought in 2020 I opened up Mind Bank, but it was just as a legal entity, and we didn't really start getting into gear about 2021, at which point I brought in a partner, right? I brought in someone to start working with us. He was a good friend of mine. So by 2022, I'm completely pretty much, I'd say 10% of my time is spent on passion. And I dedicate most of my time on Mind Bank. And it's really simple. Mornings, I'd probably do 2 hours on my passion stuff. Like, it's mostly administrative stuff, like legal stuff, like, you know, accounting with my accountant and sign off on stuff and maybe help with a tender here or there. The rest of the time is spent on Mind Bank, and my day goes from, like, work-wise, you know, I'm usually up at 6, put my kids to school. I mean, you know, then I go to the gym for an hour. So I'm in the office from like 9 to about 8 every day, right? Pretty much every single day, right? That's kind of my life. You know, I drop them off, someone else picks them up, you know? And really, that's, you know, when you're in this game, you got to hustle, man. And like, I don't believe in the 4-day work week. No, I don't believe that. Cause you know why, man? The Chinese, I've been to China. They're working, man. They're working. And this is, they're just going to outwork people. So you got to compete, work smarter, work hard, and never give up.
Yeah. You know, the 4-hour work week, I see it as a title, but what I got from that book was just to kind of figure out your life. And that's for our next, you know, topic is you being in America sometimes, and sometimes you're in Prague again, being able to, you know, because some folks, I'm sure they look at you like, hey, what do you know that we don't know? Are you avoiding taxes somehow? And it's like, as an American citizen, I mean, you can get a $90,000 credit or break, depending on how you do your taxes. But there's, being a citizen of America, there's no avoiding. I'm a dual citizen myself. There's no avoiding anything. America is the biggest pimp. They want their money. They got to have their money, you know. Yeah.
No, but that's definitely not the case. I've been here. I've been living in Prague for 17 years. I've been back and forth between the States and America the last 2 years. Every 6 weeks, I'm in my States for 3-4 weeks. So it's kind of like, boom, 6 weeks here, two, 3 weeks there, bam, 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 right? That's kind of how I live my life now between Prague and Miami. Why Prague and Miami? Well, Prague is where I've been for 17 years. And also we have a passion business here. My kids are finishing up school here. And then Miami's because that's where I moved after moving to New York. I moved to Miami and I got my master's in Miami. And then now my family's in Miami, right? My mom, my brothers and stuff. But also Miami's booming from a tech perspective in the last few years, an investment perspective and healthcare perspective. Big, big market for all topics, very relevant to Mind Bank and the company. So Miami is a very strategic investment for us, not only in time, but in resources and money and in growth. Miami is the business, right? Prague is basically our European hub because we have deals in Europe with a lot of brands, and you need a EU entity, a EU data storage location and stuff like that. And also from a time zone perspective, interesting enough, if any business people here, when you work in Europe and in the US time zone, you pretty much can cover a 24-hour work cycle between China and both sides of the world, let's say. Because usually when you're waking up in Europe, Asia's about midday-ish. When East Coast is waking up, then it's midday in Europe. And then you've got this almost 24-hour view of the business, right? So that's really interesting. Something I realized when I started my first business passion. We had a team in Singapore. I was working in Prague, and we had a team in New York working on a project. I was like, wow, this is interesting. I can work on both sides of the world based in Europe. Which you don't get in the States, actually. But it's not as glamorous as it looks, guys. You know, you spend a lot of time away from family, and when you got little kids, you know, you start realizing, here I am. I built Mind Bank so that my little girl can have me forever. But that's because I'm always at work and because I'm always traveling, and you know, missing those times. But a little side story says, Colleen, I think what would be interesting is, you know, when I got the idea for Mind Bank, I was divorced at the time. And a side note to this whole thing was like, wow, this is also a way for me to make up for lost time, right? I can tell the stories, document it. My kids can always have access to these parts of my life and my wisdom in case that, you know, they missed out because I have my kids once a week. And there's millions and millions of men and women who don't have their children all the time, right? They split custody. So I think there's also another layer to that, right? Time, right? The ability to add time to with someone.
No, time is something we, you know, at this point can't create. And again, it's you get to pick what your life is. Are you the workaholic? Or are you the 4 hour? If you guys can do 4 hours, you say, look, I want to put four hours into my day. And, you know, Tim, in all fairness, started that book saying I'm not the richest person in the world. But if I make $80,000 a month, that's OK for me. And for some people, if they make $4,000 in a month or $2,000, depending on where they live and how they live, they say it's fine. And there's no, like, I'm not one of these burn your leisure type shows that say, I'm going to show you guys how to, our guests made $1 trillion and closed their eyes and did nothing. This is not that type of a show. But what you can learn is somebody from New York lived also in the DR, how that happened. You know, and that's the game, and how you can make it happen for yourself with a little bit of hard work. And you know, you just have to, you know, merrily, life is but a dream. How big are you?
Follow your passion, man. It keeps, you know, I called the company Passion Communications because I wanted to follow my passion. I only wanted to do work that I was passionate about, right? When you say passion is the genesis of creativity, it's what makes talented people great. Right. That's kind of in our mantra. And when you look at your life and what you want to accomplish, you know, the whole concept of work goes out of the window when you have passion. It's not work for me. Right. It's like I want this. It's like, you know, if it's 1,000 hours a day, if I could work more hours a day, I would, you know, because I'm actually enjoy what I'm doing. Right. Every little bit that you every accomplishment is that little dopamine firing. It's like, oh, we're almost there, you know, we're almost there. And then you get smacked down again, and then we're almost there. You know, it's a constant struggle. But I think, you know, coming from an immigrant background and the way you grew up, I think I have to thank my parents for giving me the gift of not, we weren't poor, but we weren't rich. Like I say, giving me the gift of the ghetto, maybe.
The gift of the ghetto.
It builds resilience, you know what I mean? It builds like resilience, and you're always hustling. You're always looking for either who's trying to hustle you or how do I get out? How do I make a name for myself? You know, that street smart and that, like I say, constant search is attributed to where I grew up. Right, where you and honestly, for those listening that, you know, for the kids and the people listening, and you're probably not in the best neighborhoods in the world right now, embrace the fact that you've got this struggle, because it's going to make you stronger when you get out. Right, you're going to know stuff from other people from the city, that you learn how to read people really well, you learn how to like smell a hustle. It's you know, you can't put your finger on it sometimes, but you're like, it's, you know, it's something there, you know what I mean? And that stuff can't teach you that, you know. Owning your own business and making mistakes is business school, right? Definitely. And that's how you learn.
Definitely. For me, I can remember even as a kid, you know, and sometimes you're at, we had it great growing up. I thank my parents, and even, you know, I say most of my cousins, but you always can be in that situation where we had to share a McDonald's hamburger. I never want to share. I don't want a McDonald's hamburger now. I think I'm weaned off that totally. Cholesterol issues would tell you, yeah, you don't need that. But I those little things, I don't want to have to ever put the McValue nuggets on the McValue salad to make a chicken salad. I could just go get a salad with chicken or seafood, I'd prefer. But yeah, those things. What's your community give back that you're doing or that you plan on doing for the future? And it could be Mind Bank involved, but yeah, what's the give back?
Oh, for sure. Well, 1% of all revenue through Mind Bank goes into CO2 reduction. Obviously, we know there's an impact on our business and CO2. So we try to offset that with a contribution to with CO2 reduction. So that's on a business side. The other one is that we have a commitment with the Vatican. So the Vatican about 2 years ago created something they call the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. And they invited about, I don't know, I think it was about 120 companies in this. And we somehow got invited but through relationships, let's put it this way. And we're on this Council for Inclusive Capitalism. And our commitment to the Vatican is that by making our to make our product more inclusive by A, reducing the cost for emerging markets. So developing markets and emerging markets have a lower subscription cost for our technology than other markets. And we also are giving away 100,000 subscriptions to these markets for like NGOs and stuff like that. Because we think, you know, Mindbank has a not only role from a perspective of like heritage for the community, but also for mental health, right? It's just that simple, right? It's access to these types of solutions are very difficult to get to. So Mindbank can help in that space. So those are the two or three things that we're doing actively. And lastly, from my personal perspective, is I have a commitment to give a hefty contribution to a Better Chance organization once I get to a point where I can, you know, let go of a few $1 million, you know, because like I said earlier, you know, it's one of those things that completely changed my life and it's changed many people's lives as well.
I love it. Any plans to podcast, YouTube, or, you know, publish the book? I'm sure you have some stuff jotted down already, but, you know, any plans so people can say, wait, I want to learn more. I want to do, you know, I want to be connected and see how, you know, how you think.
Well, yeah. So I'm writing a book, which should be released in October of this year. It's basically encompassing the whole, you know, concept of AI enhanced humanity, right? Instead of being afraid of AI, how can we embrace it as the next evolutionary step in our humanity, right? That's kind of the framework of the book. So be on the lookout for that. It should be released in October. I'll reach out to you and everyone else who to plug it somehow. If you want to reach out to me, follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter and just, I'm not, the brand is a lot more on Twitter than I am, but, I'm definitely active on LinkedIn as a person, not so much on Twitter and other platforms, but, things are moving so fast that I don't even know where to begin. So I think social media is the best place to keep up with us.
Well, so I have to ask. Is the book gonna just be in English? Will it be in Czech? Will it be in French? Will it be in Italian? Will it be in Portuguese? Will it be in Spanish as well? Give us the game. And the audiobooks, I'm putting pressure on you. Will the audiobooks also be in all the languages that, you know, you can speak?
Well, I'll start with English first, you know, and see how the sales goes. And then we'll translate it into other languages. Put it this way, most likely, yes. I speak many languages, so obviously I have an internal interest in making it into a multilingual. And then it's quite important also from a brand perspective that we're multilingual because we're going to be in all these markets anyways. But from a logistical perspective, I want to be honest, it's like writing a book by itself is an endeavor. And I'm actually working on translating my mom's book for her. And that's like a journey in and of itself. But if I have the bandwidth and the team behind me, I would definitely do it. But I don't want to promise anyone yet.
Okay. Well, your mother's book is difficult because you're dealing with someone else and translation is one of those things. That's not what I said or not what I meant. And it's like, we've done that for a book from English to French. And it's like, okay, my French is terrible. So again, help me out, but you know, don't bite my head off. And I'll leave it at that. So I keep peace in the house. I won't tell you guys who said that to me. I love it, but it, you know, I the book also in Spanish because for the child, whether you know the child is in Latin America or just wherever in the world, to be able to read that. I love to see podcasts and different YouTube channels in languages outside of English. Like, we have enough YouTube channels in English. Let's do something else. Let's get the Swahilis. Let's get the Wolof. Let's get the Chichewas. You know, there's so many languages and people need, like, there's really good game that people need to hear globally.
No, 100%. And I try to do that as much as I can, right? Especially with we're building out a team, an international team now, to represent in Italian, to represent in French, and because it's important for us as a company and also as us as humanity to be multilingual, right? Something really interesting to note is that as a species, we were multilingual for millennia. And it's something that we have an anthropologist on our advisory board, and he was telling us how this is like, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, we were tribal, you know, nomads, let's say, and we would intermix in order to keep the genetic diversity, right? And these, so children were always usually from mixed parents, right? So that means that child had the two languages from the parents and the two languages from the other parent, the grandparents. So if you think about it, one child was already speaking at least four languages, right?
Wow.
As a nation, let's say as a species. And it's only in the last maybe 100 or so, 150 so years that we've kind of become monolinguistic, English only or German only, right? Go to Italy. Italy till the other day was a bunch of states, right? And if any Italian will tell you, some guy from the northern Italy is not going to understand the guy from the southern Italy, you know. So language is obviously very important for us to be multilingual. And one thing I'll leave you guys is that if you go and live in another country, make sure to learn the language. You don't have to be Shakespeare, you know. You don't have to be like the best, like speaking Czech or German or whatever. But learn the language, because that's a window into the culture, in window into the way they think. It's in the language.
Definitely. And, you know, it can be debated, but there's, you know, some proof. Jesus spoke more than one, for sure. Some say three or four, but, you know, that's
Hebrew and Aramaic, for sure. Those are the languages of the day, definitely.
Yeah, so if you know, it's a very American thing. It, you know, what is it? Patrice O'Neill, I think it was Patrice, said, you know, I go to other countries and I look at them crazy for not speaking English. I look at them as a foreigner. And that's how many Americans, you know, may he rest in peace. That's how many Americans look at it. Like, hey, you know, true story. I've been in London when I was a young man on a group tour, and the young woman, she's from like Idaho, like the heart of America, you know, and she's like, it's not spectacles, it's glasses, it's not windscreen, it's windshield. And this is in London proper. And I'm like, only in America. Yeah. Only in America. Yeah. You know, we are a different breed. And the reason why I tell you guys, travel's the best teacher. I thank you for coming on. I'm going to have links in the description. You guys saw that LinkedIn is his place. He likes to, if you have some real business, you know, for all of you, venture capitalists, angel investors who, you know, have all the money, don't know what to do with it, go have a serious conversation if you want to depart with it, not just to brag about yourself and how much your, you know, your Shiba and your Deutsche coin made you. I tease y'all guys all the time. I'm sorry. But I thank you for coming on. Any last words you want to give the people?
No, please go on, download MindBank AI and keep an eye on us. We're doing a lot of interesting things coming up. And thank you for this time. Thank you for the opportunity.
I thank you. Florida Funders, he said he is in Miami, so he qualifies. Check it out, you guys. Make sure you share the game. It will change someone's life. Be blessed.
Are you tired of the violence, tired of the injustice, police brutality, rampant discrimination, lack of gun control in this failed bias socioeconomic experiment called America? Or maybe you need a break from the relentless grind and want to regain control of your destiny, your wealth, your health, and your purpose. DiversifiedGame.com has the right course for you. Prepare for my first trip to Africa. Looking to reconnect with your roots, start a new business, or just a fresh start. Africa, aka the motherland, is waiting. Don't let the Chinese and the Mzungus have the fun and also take over the motherland. From Cairo to Mombasa, from Dakar to Cape Town, Africa has something for everyone, from business opportunities to the most amazing people, safety, leisure, and landscapes. The opportunities abound. It is time for the diaspora to reconnect with their roots. Time to reconnect with the birthplace of humanity. Africa is the last frontier. Get your head in the game and reclaim your legacy. The writing is on the wall. Babylon is falling. Give up the stress, grind, and violence inflicted on our people on this continent and prepare for a journey of restoration and joy by connecting with the land of your ancestors. Check out our new course and kick off your adventure at diversifiedgame.com.